Burleson, and welcome to CBS Mornings on the Go. Ahead on this Friday, June 5th, a double dose of good advice from Dollar Dollar Jill. First, Jill Schlesinger will tell us what the stock rally means at a time when families are feeling the pinch. And if you are planning to tie the knot this year, Jill will explain why couples need to talk about money before their wedding. Plus, Emmy-winning actress and producer Laverne Cox will join us. She has a new memoir. She tells us why she almost quit Hollywood before finding her big break. And pop star Nick Jonas talks about his new movie, Power Ballad. He stars with the hilariously funny Paul Rudd, playing a former boy band member. Find out if his real-life experience helped him get ready for this role. All that and more ahead.
But we begin this hour with extreme weather from the plains to the northeast. This tornado hit Riley County in Kansas. Local officials say it damaged several buildings. High temperatures along the East Coast, meanwhile, could set records in six states today and tomorrow. CBS News meteorologist Rob Marciano is on a beach. Okay, Rob, he's just north of New York City. Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Vlad. Yeah, you know this spot. You're a pop culture guy. Rye Playland, where they filmed Big. Zoltar gave Tom Hanks that his wish, I think. Yeah, and he went back to being a kid. A lot of kids are going to be out here this weekend because they're going to be trying to cool off from the heat that's building. This is really the first real weekend of the summer, what we consider to be summer. So temperatures will be cooperating before the severe weather comes in. So today, upper 80s, lower 90s, up and down the I-95 corridor. And then tomorrow, there'll be even warmer than that, maybe even some record-breaking temperatures. So getting in that water will be chilly for sure, and maybe a shock to the system. Down in the Gulf Coast, these water temperatures in the Gulf are great, but there is a rip current risk across much of the Texas coastline and the Alabama and Florida coastline, and on the east side of Florida as well. So be aware of that and keep an eye out. Listen to your lifeguards. In the Mid-Atlantic, water temperatures are a little bit cooler, into the 60s there, 50s across the northeast. That there are actually advisories out for be careful to go in the water. If it gets warm, it'll shock your system. That could cause some problems. And Great Lakes, the water temperatures are very warm, are very chilly right now as well. The severe weather threat today is going to be across the midsection of the country, from Lincoln, Nebraska, up through Iowa. And then tomorrow it does slide over towards the east, Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and eventually here in the northeast before cooling things off. So be safe in the water and be safe when those storms come your way. Kelly, over to you.
Rob, I forgive you for being at the beach because that was an excellent movie reference. Love me some Tom Hanks and Big.
That's right.
You just programmed my Friday night. All right, thank you. As you prepare to enjoy a barbecue this summer, you've probably noticed beef prices are at record highs. Now there are concerns they could increase even more because of the return of a parasite in southwest Texas that's threatening the cattle industry. Jason Allen has the details.
We rode into the rugged Texas hill country with Robin Giles, where his family has raised Angora goats since 1885.
They've been bred to be adapted to that environment.
That environment used to include screwworm flies. The flies lay eggs on an open wound or a scratch of any animal, then, as their name suggests, burrow their way inside.
From April to September, by God, anything that was born got worms, including the deer fawns.
That was until scientists figured out they could breed and release sterile flies and keep screwworms from reproducing. Over 30 years, the USDA dropped millions of sterile flies out of airplanes, forcing the pest south to Panama. But in the last 4 years, the fly started coming back.
How did we wind up back in this position where it's threatening again?
Just has kind of become a perfect storm where those infested animals have continued to move the fly northward.
Dr. T.R. Lansford is with the Texas Animal Health Commission, training staff across the state how to recognize the fly.
When you look at screwworm flies next to other flies, they're almost indistinguishable from one another. And live flies are such a threat, even for research, you can't bring them into the United States.
We only have one facility in our entire hemisphere, and it's only producing 100 million flies per week.
The USDA has committed hundreds of millions of dollars to building new sterile fly breeding facilities, including in Mission, Texas. But they won't be online until next year. The U.S. banned live cattle imports from Mexico last July, contributing to lower herd numbers and higher beef prices.
It's not just livestock and wildlife owners or managers. It's all animal owners that need to be aware of this.
For CBS Mornings, I'm Jason Allen in San Antonio.
In today's Money Watch, summer is almost here, and that means wedding season. According to The Knot, the average U.S. wedding now costs more than $34,000. And of course, in some areas, the price can be much higher. CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger is here with the financial conversations every couple should have before they say I do. Thanks for joining us again.
Of course. Great to be here. I love this topic.
Oh, well, okay. I'm going to out myself.
When do
it. My husband and I got married, right? We were focused on how much are we going to pay for the wedding, right?
All yeah. that.
And we didn't have this conversation, and it's caused some of the worst fights after
Ooh.
The fact. So what should we have talked about before,
okay, let's roll the tape back. Sure. I mean, listen, I think it's very hard for a lot of people to have these conversations. You come in with a certain amount of baggage, right? It's yeah. your family of origin. Oh, my dad was really bad about money. My mom was really strict about money. So all these things come to bear. I think it's good to have conversations, mostly so that you can kind of get a sense of, like, where are you coming from? Hmm. Who are you about money? Does it cause you stress? Is this a conversation that's really hard? And of course, having the conversation before you get married is good, especially if you're spending tens of thousands of dollars. But even if not, if you're going to City Hall to get married, having a conversation where you're talking about, hey, you know what, this is kind of how I feel, or it makes me a little bit freaked out to have these conversations. This is what we're talking about, opening the dialogue.
Mm. All right, so when it comes to specific topics, what topics should we touch on?
Well, this is where it gets interesting. We have something called a balance sheet, right?
Okay.
What you own and what you owe. You're 21 years old when you get married, right, Nate?
Yep. And
what did you own?
Nothing.
Right. That was an easy conversation. Here's what I own. Zero. So what do I owe? Well, a lot of people come into a marriage with debt. They've got student loan debt. They've got cars they had to pay for. Maybe they have a credit card. You want to air this information.
Put it on the table.
Put it on the table. Hey, how much am I earning? How much are you earning? Now, Kelly, great nod to you. I think your generation really started having more of these open conversations, and even younger than you, that people are actually having these conversations. Vlad and I are a little bit more of the elders. These were not easy conversations
to
have. They really aren't. And so I think it's important to just say, what do you have? What do you earn? What are your goals? Do we really want to buy a house? Is that something that's important to you? Are we going to have kids? If so, are we going to pay for education? All of these are wide-ranging topics, but you're going to have to revisit it. And it doesn't mean that when you make that declaration of what you want in that moment, it's the be-all, end-all, but you've got to start somewhere.
So let's talk about joint accounts. 38% of couples keep funds only in joint accounts. I've always found that interesting. I mean, we have a joint account, but that I don't think there's anything in it because we only use it when we receive checks that are in our name.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that our finances are separate. We know what each of us has, but we don't draw money from a joint account.
I think that the conversation about combining your money versus keeping it separate is really couple dependent. And I think especially if you've gotten married a little bit later in life, and I think that you've had a pattern of managing your money in one way versus another, I think that that's important. Now, I think many couples, what they'll do is they'll have a joint account to sort of deal with the joint expenses, and maybe they'll feed into it. But regardless of whatever system you choose, if you say joint, we keep it separate, you share the information and you know the system. I mean, look, it is clear that in relationships, we have a division of power, right? We're allocating our labor.
Right.
We're saying you're taking care of the bill paying, you're taking care of the investment. That's fine. But you have to communicate what the system is. You have to communicate where the money is. Where are the passwords to get to these things? If you broke your leg tomorrow and you couldn't get somewhere, you needed me to make a change in your retirement account, how would I do that? So separate is fine. Joint is fine. Conversations, that's the critical
piece. That's essential. All right, Jill Schlesinger, you're essential as well. Love having you. Thank you.
Game two of the NBA Finals tips off tonight in San Antonio. Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs say they'll bounce back after losing the opening game at home to the New York Knicks. Now, we've been focusing on the hometown team here in New York, of course, but it's only fair that we give San Antonio a little time in the spotlight. Jason Allen is there. He has our report.
Game one of the NBA Finals was a clash of the Titans.
Wembanyama against Robinson goes inside, and the left-handed slam.
The Knicks overcoming a double-digit deficit behind a 30-point performance from Jalen Brunson.
Underneath, puts it up, puts it in. Jalen Brunson does it again.
edging out Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs on their own court.
That was a prize fight. Those two heavyweights going at it.
The Knicks' Karl-Anthony Towns locked Wembanyama down on defense.
Towns has had some of the best defense of his career in these playoffs, but he hasn't guarded a man like that.
Though the Spurs star still scored 26 points.
I'm going to figure it out. I was bad tonight. It's not more complicated than that.
Including Wednesday's victory, the Knicks go into tonight's matchup having won 12 straight playoff games.
Nobody can stop us!
Back in the Big Apple, fans say it's over for the Spurs, who will head to New York for Game 3 of the Finals next week.
They're not coming here, and they're not taking any games if they lose Game 2.
The Knicks faithful have also flooded into the River City.
This is our house now, you heard?
Knicks in four. We're not coming back.
But we tracked down Spurs fans along the famed Riverwalk.
Go, Spurs, go!
And in a city that always remembers the Alamo, this fight isn't over.
This team has proven that we can come back and we win against all the odds.
Even some New Yorkers seem to be on board.
I don't care if it's Big Cat, Yankee hats, Subway rats. Spurs at 7.
Whoa!
What?
Wait, what?
Yeah, there you go. That's right. We appreciate the support out here, Nate. Maybe we can get you some gear back for the finals when they get back out to New York. You know, for a lot of the guys who have been here on the court, this is their first NBA finals. So maybe that game one win for the Knicks, just a little bit of a beginner's luck that's going to turn around later tonight. We'll see.
I hear you on that, brother. Thank you for the report. And get a Victor Wembanyama jersey for me. All right.
We'll get one of those. I look good in a Wembanyama jersey. You got it.
Sounds good. All right. Coming up. Prompter. We have a prompter issue. B-roll prompter, please. Oh, wait a minute. Don't worry. I got my scripts here.
Yoink.
Yo, listen. I know I picked this. Y'all got to chill with these pranks. I got a job to do. Giselle, seriously? With that baby jersey on. All right. Infant size. I know. Roll the prompter.
You got this,
Nate. I put the scribble scrabble in there. You know what I'm thinking about. Welcome back to CBS Mornings. It is time for a look at some of the other headlines that caught our eye with Adriana Diaz. Adriana, good morning.
Good morning, everybody. So we begin with this first story that is first signs that what is currently called the Trump Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts will go back to its original name after a federal judge ordered the former name restored. A memo sent to staff to, quote, immediately change the email signatures, letterhead, and other documents to the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts, or Kennedy Center. Some signs around the center were already taped over yesterday. The judge said the board had overstepped its authority when changing it to include Trump's name. Now to the Bahamas, and exclusive new video in the search for that Michigan woman who is missing, whose disappearance is being investigated as now a possible murder. The footage shows a U.S. Coast Guard crew seizing the dinghy that Lynette Hooker and her husband Brian were using. Brian Hooker says she fell overboard and was swept out into the rough surf. He has consistently maintained his innocence, but there are a lot of questions. And it's what's being called a miracle. A little boy is safe this morning after being thrown from a truck onto the hood of a police cruiser near Atlanta. We have to warn you, this video is hard to watch, but again, the young boy is fine. You can see the child being thrown onto a police car during the three. Let's take a look at it now.
And that suspension.
Are you okay?
And you can see the little child being thrown onto the police car during the three vehicle accident before being helped by the officer involved in the crash. Amazingly, all of the injuries were minor, including for the little boy who only had a few scratches. But the police department here in Georgia said this is another reminder why kids need to be in car seats and wearing seatbelts.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And finally, a very blunt warning this morning from the artificial intelligence company Anthropic about the rapid growth of AI. The company is calling on all major artificial intelligence labs to slow down the pace of development. They say the technology has been growing so quickly that we might lose control of it. Anthropic warns that AI systems could begin improving themselves without any human intervention. We've all seen Mission Impossible. We remember this story, and that could pose significant risks. The co-founder of Anthropic, Jack Clark, told the BBC, right now it's like the AI industry has a gas pedal, but it does not have a brake pedal.
I mean, the fact that this warning from Anthropic suggests that not only could this happen without human intervention, that it could build the next generation of...
That's even smarter than what it's currently
running.
The
one that was built by humans.
You know, we oftentimes joke about this over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. This is the plot of every movie that involves AI. And I would laugh. It's not that funny anymore.
Can't say that the warning signs aren't there.
No, and, you know, Anthropic, of course, it's about to have one of the biggest IPOs in history this year. I do think that this is smart for them to say, hey, you know, we need to slow down.
Breaks, yeah.
But how do you do this without international collaboration? We would all need to say, let's pause. And you know that this is essentially the nuclear arms race.
Because if we do it, then the Chinese won't.
Everybody wants
exactly.
a leg up.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Competition.
Okay, Adriana, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Today marks 1 week since an American college student disappeared in Japan while vacationing with his family. Now, the Auburn University student was last spotted getting on a train by himself. A short time ago, his parents spoke with our own Anna Korin, who's on the ground in Japan. Anna joins us now from the city of Kyoto. Anna, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Kelly. That's right. We've just wrapped up an interview with the family that has been going through a roller coaster of emotions this past week. His parents, Nancy and Keith, say one minute they're hopeful, the next minute they're feeling numb.
And police were just here.
Yeah.
You spoke to them for several hours. What did they say?
So they said that they have concluded their search of the area that they committed to, and they conducted a very thorough search over 3 days to include 100 police officers, canine dogs, the helicopters, and they did not find him. My fear is that he got hurt and that he's stuck. My fear is that he doesn't have enough food because there's plenty of water and that he's lost. Those mountains or that forest goes for a very long time. And like I said, it's extremely dense.
I guess a lot of people want to know why he left.
Sure, we had an argument because I was using a little bit too much ChatGPT. Japan is a country that I've had a hard time navigating. Weston is very anti-AI because, he's into sustainability engineering and AI uses a lot of water and is depleting a lot of water resources. And it's a sore subject with us. We will find him.
Yeah, we have complete confidence that we're gonna find him.
Now, at the moment, the police are obviously suspending their search, but the parents are going to start their own. They're hiring a professional search and rescue crew here in Japan. That's going to cost something like over $100,000. They're also relying on the generosity of people here in Japan who want to help, who want to go out there and keep searching for Weston. But Nancy and Keith say they are not leaving Japan without their son. Kelly.
Yeah, Anna, such an interesting nugget in that interview about the argument over AI. So appreciate you bringing us that interview, and our fingers are crossed. Thank you.
Award-winning actress and producer Laverne Cox is here in the studio. There she is. What's up, Laverne? Coming up, she will share her revealing new memoir, including why she almost gave up on her dream. We'll be right back.
I need some of these. I made my own. Couture. Thomas here doing carry a size 13.
Duct tape?
Metallics are very in this season.
Oh man, Laverne Cox made history as the first openly transgender actress nominated for a Primetime Emmy Award for her role on Orange is the New Black. But before her award-winning career, she almost quit Hollywood until she says she discovered the power of transcendence. Cox explores that journey in her new memoir. It's called Transcendent. She opens up about confronting childhood trauma, finding her true self, and blazing paths beyond entertainment. We make it easy for you to buy the book. Scan the QR code you see on the screen right now to pre-order it today. And we're so happy Laverne Cox joins us now. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. My gosh. I can't believe the book is going to be in bookstores in a few days.
It's going to be in bookstores. We've already read it. And here's what I want to ask you. The woman before us is an Emmy Award winner.
Talk about it.
Said. Trailblazing activist. Mm-hmm. But you write for years, quote, I created a persona of who I thought I was supposed to be so that no one around me knew who I really was. So who was that person and how did you find transcendence?
Well, the book, the title comes from the movement of transcendentalism that Emerson started. I read Walden by Thoreau when I was a freshman in high school at the Alabama School of Fine Arts. I'm from Mobile, Alabama. And the Alabama School of Fine Arts is in Birmingham. And the second I read transcendentalism and transcending, I was like, that's what I've been wanting to do my whole life. This is me in high school. Like, I wanted to transcend the poverty that I was born into. I wanted to transcend the assumptions that were made about me because I was Black. I wanted to transcend my body and the gender I was assigned at birth. I wanted to, like, ascend into this sort of divine, transcendent space where I could just be and not be sort of made of people putting things on me, where I could just be and be myself, yeah. Really. Yeah. And transcend, really, it was about transcending, like, all of the things that people were sort of putting on me.
Yeah, and you write about understanding yourself while navigating bullying, isolation, even questioning your own identity. So when, at what point did you find that inner strength?
It's a process. And I think I sort of hate, like, I'm very, like, self-help girl. I'm always, like, reading, trying to better myself.
Yeah.
And when people, like, give you tips and stuff, it's BS. It's for me, it's been years of therapy. I've been in therapy for 26 years, group therapy, reading about shame, doing trauma resiliency therapy for the past 10 years, and doing a lot of work on myself. And the hard truth, the persona that I created for myself when I was an adolescent into my 20s and 30s was like, oh, everything's fabulous, I'm fabulous, because I thought that, like, sexually abused, bullied, poor kid from Alabama was not worthy. I didn't feel inherently worthy with the truths of my life. And so facing those truths and understanding that I was worthy despite all the things that had happened to me. The book, by the way, is in three sections. The first section is what's wrong with me. The second section is what happened to me. And the third is what's right with me. And that's kind of the journey that we experience when we build trauma resilience and are healing from trauma. And I thought there was something wrong with me as a kid. And then I realized it's really about what happened to me. And then, like, you know, there were so many things that were right with me as a kid that got me. I'm still alive, which feels like a miracle.
I want to read a line from the book, because I read this and I felt like the vulnerability just leapt off the page. Mm-hmm. And this line, it's after a very trying experience that I don't want to spoil for folks. And you say, by now I had learned not to cry, to hold everything in. I was going to hell. I knew it. My fate was sealed. I felt like nothing, disgusted and disgusting. I read that over and over. And I think about then you have to take that trauma and go into a world as a trans woman in Hollywood and know that there are going to be some things thought about you, that there could be bullying. How do you go from a place where you've experienced that to then embracing what your career could be in that environment?
This book was really hard to write. Even hearing you read that, I'm like, doing the audiobook, I thought I was gonna die. So this was not an easy book to write, but I have always, what has transcended my insecurity, my fears, is the love that I have for performing, the love I have for acting, for getting better at what I do, and studying. While I'm going to Alabama School of Fine Arts, I learned how hard you have to work to really be good at something. Mm. And that process I'm still deeply dedicated to. I'm still a student. And that passion overrode everything else. And then, because of the passion for the work of being an artist and trying to be the best artist, that made me commit to therapy. That made me commit to, like, self-improvement, so that when I did have my moment in the sun, in the light, that I would be prepared and that I would wouldn't sabotage it.
Well, you write.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And you write that success would become my shield from all the awfulness life had thrown at me. And you have made it. You are that success. And we're so proud of you. And we're happy that you're here with us today. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
The book is called Transcendent. It's on sale June 9th. Scan the QR code right now on your screen to pre-order it today.
All right, ahead, singer and actor Nick Jonas will be here to talk about his new movie. It's called Power Ballad. Stick around. You're watching CBS Mornings. Welcome back to CBS Mornings. You know that song. That is Nick Jonas singing his hit song, Jealous. The pop star has found success both as a solo artist and as a member of the Jonas Brothers, of course. In his new movie, Power Ballad, Jonas plays Danny. The character is a former boy band star trying to break out on his own. When he's at a wedding in Ireland, he meets Rick, a past his prime wedding singer played by Paul Rudd. And the two bond over a late night jam session, and it changes their lives.
You never see the world through a TV. And nothing ever worked it is easy. Never gonna fall if you don't look down. Don't look down.
Love that.
That is it.
Don't look down.
Can I have that?
Look, all I did was just throw in a little paprika, a little spice on top.
Some spicy spice.
Add whatever spices you want.
And we love a little spicy spice in the morning. Nick Jonas joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, thank you for joining us. Your character, Danny, former boy band member, and obviously you come from that cloth. What have you taken from your personal life that kind of helped you with this character?
Well, it's funny you were playing the video for Jealous, just thinking back to that chapter of my life. You know, the brothers had actually broken up as a band for a season, and I was finding my voice on my own. And that's kind of where we meet Danny, my character in this movie. He's trying to figure out what his sound is. He's feeling the pressure of, needing that hit. And by way of this jam session, he meets Rick. And unfortunately, this song that they start that night comes out 6 months later, and Rick is not given the credit that he deserves. And it kind of spins both guys into a bit of a crazy journey.
You know, it makes you think about the meaning of music, but then also the meaning of life. You have Paul Rudd, his character, just trying to figure out where he is as an artist, as a man, as a father, as a husband, all these different things. The dynamic between their relationship was really special. Why do you believe this movie is so relatable? Because I'm sitting in there and I'm watching it and I'm getting in my feelings.
Yeah. I think it goes back to the filmmaker, John Carney. He's just got such a great sense of story and how to include music in a movie. You know, he's directed some incredible films, Once, Sing Street, and I was a massive fan and was desperate to work with him. And then when I found out Paul Rudd was going to be in this thing too, I was eager to be a part of it. And I think it just resonates because it's covering a lot of themes about identity, self-worth, where we place that importance in our lives, whether it's our success or our failures, you know, all these things, and family life. And, there's a lot of twists and turns and questions that I think the audience will have for themselves after they watch this movie.
Yeah. Speaking of creativity and collaboration, you and your wife, Priyanka, you kind of pride yourselves on that, whether it's when you're relaxing at home or on vacation. She mentioned something about writing two shows together while you guys are just vibing out.
Yeah.
How big of a part of your relationship is creativity?
Well, I think that's one of the things that is, so special about our relationship is that, of course, we bring some of our work home with us. That's natural for every couple.
Yeah.
And ours happens to be the fact that we get to kind of create, music and TV projects and film projects and give input on those different things for each other. And I'm so grateful that I'm able to have that kind of flow with her outside of the beautiful life we're building together that I also... have a partner in crime on the development side and things like that.
I met Paul Rudd some years ago and I was a fan. And then after leaving, hanging out with them, I thought to myself, he is cooler than I thought. He is literally one of the coolest guys in the world. What was it like for you when you met him? Because you were a fan of Paul Rudd before.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody is, I guess.
Paul's, you're right about
that. He's an icon. He's the best. And, we had a couple mutual friends who told me that he was going to be a good time. And actually, this scene was our very first day working together. And I knew right away, I was like, we're going to have a great time. And by the way, he's singing and playing guitar in this movie, and he's phenomenal.
I thought that was his voice.
It's really him, yeah. I mean, we all know his comedic work and, his filmography, but to see him come into that setting, the director too, John Carney, is a great musician.
Yeah.
And to just send it and to be like, so fearless and crush it like he did was so inspiring.
You play the role of all of these different things in this industry. What is next for you? You're one of the most versatile talents in the business.
That's very kind. I got a lot of things coming up. I'm currently on a little solo run. We just finished up the Brothers tour leg down in South America. And then, I'm busy kind of between different different film and TV projects the rest of this year, but I think the thing I'm sort of most excited about is some downtime with the family in July.
I know that's right. Well, you enjoy it because you deserve it.
Thanks.
Nick Jonas, thank you.
Thank you.
Power Ballad is in theaters everywhere today.
Tomorrow on CBS Saturday Morning, Anthony Mason sits down with Emmy and Grammy-winning comedian Patton Oswalt. He's about to release a new stand-up special, Tea and Scotch.
I've taken 2 infant CPR courses. I still can't tell you the amount of presses on the chest or the mouth, but I can recite Rucker Hauer's monologue from the end of Blade Runner to a T. When the grid goes down, I am good for nothing. I'll be retelling the plot of Die Hard like I'm Homer or something.
Then on CBS Sunday Morning, Ben Mankiewicz goes to the movies with Steven Spielberg. Spielberg's new film, Disclosure Day, imagines a world where aliens are here, but hidden from humans. Who gave Spielberg the tip that all this alien stuff was coming out?
Right. That's so cool. Steven Spielberg talking about Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Ben Mankiewicz. I'm so here.
Speaking of aliens, Victor Wembanyama. The Spurs. But that does it for us. We will see you on Monday on CBS Mornings.